You are Locked On the NFL, your daily NFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, hello, I am Matt Williamson. This is the Locked On NFL Podcast. How is everyone this wonderful Wednesday? Wednesday means we have Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus, a handful of things to discuss there. Tomorrow I'll talk with Mike Sando. I'll be picking games at my bookie on Friday. We had a good conversation with Sage Rosenfels yesterday. Mike, how's it going, man?
Going great. Excited to be back.
Yeah. We had to skip a week. No big deal. The news of the day, or the news of the morning at least, is the Giants make two trades back-to-back last night and this morning. They trade Eli Apple to the Saints for a late-round pick. They trade Damon Harrison to the Lions for a fifth-round pick. We talked a little bit of Eli Apple. They're really looking for a number two corner there, and they play a lot of man coverage. I think Apple's probably best suited for that, at least coming out of Ohio State, where he played a lot of man. Damon Harrison is somebody that the new staff inherited, and I think they're looking for more Nimdiche-type defensive tackles than run pluggers. And Patricia, you know, it comes over from the Patriots, obviously, and they always look for those big hogs in the middle, the Sheltons and Branch and guys like that. So I'm curious your take of these moves from a Saints, Lions, and Giants perspective.
Yeah, so from the Giants perspective, it made sense to get rid of Damon Harrison. That one, yeah. I have no problem with. Fifth round pick, I thought maybe you could have gotten more. I think Danny Shelton, what do you go for, a third rounder over the offseason or a fourth rounder? I thought you could have gotten somewhere in that neighborhood, because Damon Harrison, I mean, he is the best run stuffing nose tackle in the NFL that still has a good deal of value when you're that good at stuffing the run. But then I think they're going to cut him at the end of the season. They're not in a position. They finally realized that they're not in a win now position. They're not a team that's going to compete this year, not a team that's probably going to compete next year. And so at 30 years old, Damon Harrison's just not going to be a part of, you know, when they are going to be competing. So get whatever you can for him. I don't disagree with that move, but the Eli Apple one, to just give up on a cornerback who was trending upwards. I mean, he was a first round pick. He obviously hasn't lived up to those expectations, but he wasn't bad this year by any means. He was around an average cornerback, and the fact that he's improving year on year with, you know, the evaluation you had on him coming out a top 10 pick, you'd think that he's at least a guy worth holding on to. But a fourth round pick for someone like that, I mean, fourth round's the borderline where it might as well be nothing at that point. Fifth rounders or fifth, anything after that, you're really not recouping a lot of value. There's not a lot of hits there. I posted yesterday something about all the fourth round and later cornerbacks in the last three drafts. I think there's maybe two or three guys I'd rather have than Eli Apple at this point. So from the Saints' perspective, that's a big win for them. Just get anyone who can contribute for as low a pick as that is, because they only have, you know, they already lost their first and third rounders next year. They only have a second and fourth and then later. So I think from their perspective, it's a huge win.
Yeah, I do too. And it seemed like there was a little baggage there with Apple, or discontent with the organization going back to last year's staff. But, I mean, still, I mean, clearly he has first-round traits.
Yeah, that's the thing. I thought, I guess maybe that discontent did carry over. I thought with the new staff, it, you know, fresh sort of start, he was playing better. I thought that sort of stuff was behind him. But if it wasn't, you know, you don't know what's going on in the locker room. If it wasn't, I can definitely see that you don't want any more, you know, sort of personalities in that locker room than you're already stuck with at this point.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't remember, too, the Giants actually grabbed a corner in the supplementary draft, and then he got hurt as soon as he got there. So
yeah,
maybe they have big plans for him next year, but still, giving up on corners is a lot different than giving up on run-stuffing nose tackles.
Yeah, they needed a cornerback before they even traded him away. Like you mentioned, they did draft him in the supplementary draft, but banking on a guy who already has a, you know, season-ending injury after his first year, not a great, you know, sort of insurance plan there. They're already needing corners, and to get rid of one who still has some promise, I wouldn't do. That's not something I would end up doing.
Yeah, and lastly on this subject, what's your take now on the Lions defenses? I think it's a very good offense. I think it's a playoff offense. I've been saying all along that they're four or five starters short on defense. But what do you think of their front, just their defensive tackles now? Do you think it's a strength of the team now?
I think with the way Deshaun Hand's been playing, he's exceeded my expectations by a lot. I think it's at least solid in the middle after what they had you know, to start the year, it didn't look good at all. What they had last year was terrible as well. So it's a huge improvement over that. Still, though, affecting the passers is just tough for this front four. They're just not, they don't have the talent up there to get after opposing quarterbacks. So from that perspective, Damon Harrison isn't adding anything. He's just adding a little to your run defense, whereas their pass defense has been the issue all along. So obviously it's a good move for them. I still think it solidifies a position of big need, but I don't think it's all of a sudden transforming that defense into anything, any sort of contending defense.
No, I agree. It's starting to look more like the Patriots, and I would imagine this will be a heavy defensive offseason for the Lions. It has to be. And no doubt. And Rome wasn't built in a day if you're Patricia, and you know what he inherited there wasn't exactly perfect for the transition on defense either. As for the Saints, clearly they're aggressive. They're in it to win it. And that brings me to my friends at Blue Chew. You know, the Saints aren't sitting around. They go out and they trade up for Marcus Davenport. They trade for another first-round corner that we just mentioned. They trade for Teddy Bridgewater. And that's what I'm saying here with Blue Chew, folks. If you guys have an issue, particularly you men in the bedroom, you can't just ignore it, right? You got to address the situation. You go to BlueChew.com. That's like blue, it's in the color blue. Because Blue Chew brings you it's the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. So you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill. So you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises. I don't know about you guys, but I never quite understood of, hey, I'm going to take a pill, and then, hun, I'm going to meet you in an hour or whatever. Like, that doesn't quite work all that well. Blue Chews is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor visits, no wasting time in the pharmacy, and best of all, no awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and Blue Chew prepares and ships direct. They're cheaper than a pharmacy. So we got a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com, and you get your first shipment free. I mean, how do you pass that up? Even if you don't have an issue, do it anyways. Use our special promo code. Which is Locked On, all one word, and all you pay is the $5 shipping. So again, BlueChew.com, promo code Locked On. All right, Mike, you just published an article, a good one, of course, about the highest. I'm not going to put words in your mouth. It's the highest rated guys, offensive players in the last month.
So it's the guys trending upwards over the last 4 weeks of the season. Maybe who didn't start out hot, but who have been playing really well as of late.
And I think the most important name to talk about is going back to the Lions is Matthew Stafford. Yes, we've been saying this is a really good offense, but he's been erratic through his career. I'm a believer, but quietly, people aren't talking about Stafford. I mean, Mahomes and Rivers and Breeze and all these other guys are lighting the league up. Stafford's kind of quietly been excellent lately.
Yeah, I think that has definitely been lost in the conversation of all these, like you said, all these quarterbacks lighting it up. Stafford's also having, in the midst of a career year, and I think that offense has kind of gotten swept under the rug because they just did not start out great. Then they lost to the Cowboys, and they're not, you know, at the top of, I think they're still middling in the NFC North. They don't really look like they're necessarily going to compete there, but that offense has been very good. And I think with the receivers he has, they can hang in basically any game. They can hang with anybody at any given time. At the same time, with the defense they have, they can lose to anybody at any given time. But you know, with Kenny Golladay, Marvin Jones, and Golden Tate, he really has, and the best offensive line he's had in his entire career. I don't think it's a surprise that Stafford's also in the midst of the best season of his career.
Yeah, and it looks like they might actually have a running game, and I hope they actually dedicate a high percentage of the touches to Kerryon Johnson. My hunch is they won't. That Blunt and Theo will still kick in and, you know, cause problems there, but you know, Stafford's never had a running game.
Yes, yeah, so that is the thing. They finally have an O-line running game. They finally have the pieces around him that he's really just never had in his entire career. He probably had the worst rushing offense of any, you know, quarterback in the history of the NFL in terms of just effectiveness around him. And to actually have that, you know, getting into more favorable second down situations, more favorable third down situations, I don't think it's any surprise that he's executing the offense at a higher level at this point. And he's also, with having less pressure from his offensive line, he's performing better under pressure because it's not that sort of quick guys in his face. It's later, it's bull rush pressure. So when he is under pressure, his passer rating this year has been way better than it has been in the past.
And he hasn't had to be Superman. You know, I mean, we know that he can get, you know, push the envelope there to some degree. There's two receivers on this list. I'm going to kind of just graze over them. DeAndre Hopkins and Adam Thielen. I don't think that probably shocks anyone. I mean, the way that Thielen's playing, and Hopkins is always amazing. We get to see him tomorrow night. Kareem Hunt, I'm sure some fantasy owners were worried about him early in the season. Like, hey, the Chiefs are putting up numbers left and right. Why isn't Hunt getting involved? But we saw him on a national stage, too. I mean, he looks as good as ever.
Yeah, and it's scary for, you know, opposing defenses, because for the first 3 weeks, he really wasn't necessarily effective. The offense was playing at a high level. We thought, oh, maybe they're one-dimensional. Maybe we can shut them down by just, you know, focusing all our resources on this passing attack. But now all of a sudden, teams have started to do that, and Kareem Hunt's just running wild on teams. You know, he's breaking tackles left and right. That what he did to the Bengals was absurd on some of those carries that he had. And I think he's, over the past 4 weeks, averaging 4.4 yards after contact per attempt. So he's just rolling. So, and if anyone thought his rookie year was a fluke, it's not. I mean, the dude just has some of the best balance I've ever seen from a running back. Mm-hmm. And so basically, if the Chiefs can beat you any which way they want to, they can play any sort of football game. And that's why they're so scary right now.
It was almost like they didn't need him for the first couple weeks, but they know exactly what he is, you know?
Yeah.
Are there many backs in the league you would take over Hunt right now?
Oof,
I mean, I don't need a list,
question.
But I mean,
I'd have to think about that.
Let me throw names at you. Say yay or nay.
Okay.
Gurley.
I'd probably say no. I think Hunt's just more talented as a tackle breaker.
Really? I didn't think.
Yeah.
Barkley.
Yeah, I'd probably take Barkley over him.
Kamara.
Yeah, I'd probably take Kamara.
I'm smitten with Kamara. I think he's really special.
Yeah.
Zeke Elliott.
That one's about, I think they're about the same in my eyes.
Okay. Let me go like two or three more here. Melvin Gordon, having a great year.
No, still Kareem Hunt.
And McCaffrey and David Johnson, my last two.
I'd probably take David Johnson, but probably not McCaffrey.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I think David Johnson's special.
Yeah, I do too. I think we haven't seen the best of him yet either. You know, his tape still looks really good. To round out this article, which I urge everyone to check out, of Pro Football Focus, two offensive linemen that I don't think get the recognition they deserve ever. I mean, these guys have been really good players since they basically entered the league. Well, Shaq Mason's taken a little while, but Ramczyk was a stud last year. I think the Saints now have clearly the best set of tackles in the league, maybe the best offensive line in the league. And he's not like the weak link at right tackle.
Yeah, I think it's absurd that he lasted all the way to 32 last season with just what he was coming out. I mean, he was very good after having played one season of college football, basically. I mean, I know Bowles was too, but Bowles was not nearly as effective in college. Bowles was more of a project, more of a guy that people projected to the next level. But Ramczyk was getting it done at Wisconsin, freak athletically, with 1 year of playing major college football, and it's translated right away to the NFL. I mean, he's in the conversation, not just for best right tackle. He's one of the best tackles in the league, period, at this point. He's only given up one hurry over the last three games, which is
wow.
That's somewhat helped out by Breeze's quick release, but they've had tackles that have given up a lot more hurries than that with Breeze's quick release. So he's just getting the job done repeatedly.
And Shaq Mason's not like most guards. I mean, he's shorter. He's got a really strong wrestling background, from what I remember. Really low, explosive. He's fun to watch.
Yeah, he'll alternate just these incredible reps where he's taking a guy, you know, 3 yards off the ball one-on-one, and then he'll get swam because, like you mentioned, he is like 6'1". He looks more like a center. I think a lot of people pegged him as a center coming out, but the Patriots have him at right guard. So incredibly low center of gravity, can get so much leverage in the running game, but still a little bit, you know, can get worked by length at times. But he's had more positively graded blocks over the last 4 weeks by, I think, a margin of 5 over any other offensive lineman in the NFL. He's just, when he gets a good block on you, a crease is going to be opened up.
Yeah, I mean, he's you don't say as much about guards, but he's kind of a highlight reel guy.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, his highlight tape would be very fun to watch. The last guy on the list is Zach Ertz. I'm not even going to touch on him either. He's kind of like Thielen at this point for his position, just producing week after week.
He's a focal point of that offense. I think he's gotten 10 targets in all but 1 week this season, which for a tight end, that's like Gronkowski territory. That just doesn't happen, really. So
historic,
extremely consistent, yeah.
All right, we're going to take another quick break, and then I got two more topics to touch on with Mike, and we will be right back. All right, Mike, you had mentioned that you're working on a project now comparing the top quarterbacks in the league. So what are you doing there?
Yeah, so it was for the Washington Post, basically. So the top five quarterbacks in our grading right now, there are three guys drafted before 2005 and then two guys drafted within the last 3 years. So 2016, 2017 are the other two. So obviously it's Jared Goff, Patrick Mahomes, and then Philip Rivers, Drew Brees, and Tom Brady.
Okay.
And just interesting sort of that dichotomy of guys who have been doing it forever, I mean, almost quite literally, and guys who are just very new, very, you know, within the last few years already playing at as high levels as we see in the quarterback position, which is just, I think, an interesting, just something we never really see in this, the amount of young quarterback talent we have in the NFL right now, since maybe like 2012.
Yeah.
The last time that it really was.
It's really interesting. I think there's a lot of reasons for it. Is I think finally coaches are, you know, making the transition easier on their quarterbacks. They're installing a lot of college principles. I think a lot of these quarterbacks have been coached better throughout their lifetime, all these Elite 11 camps, things like that. And then another thing I really noticed is all quarterbacks now are good athletes. Like, there's no stiffs. I mean, there's no Bledsoes. I mean, even like a Rivers, like if he came into the league now, even like Rosen, Rosen's a pocket passer.
Yeah, Rosen's not much of an athlete.
No, you're right. But I mean, if you look at the cross, all the 28 and under quarterbacks, there's some athletes there. I mean, including
vast majority can.
Yeah. I mean, including like an Allen or Trubisky, who's really struggling with athleticism or with, you know, passing and accuracy. They're elite athletes, you know, I mean, Winston, all these guys. I mean, do you have any more theories on it than that? I mean, that why there's
I do
so
think
many?
The two biggest things are, one, passing is more prevalent at the younger levels.
Yes.
So high school, you're passing, you're coming out passing. In college, you're passing, you know, 75% of the time. You're getting far more reps than quarterbacks ever did in the past. And that's and pretty much every high school and, you know, college offense that you're running is going to be a pass happy offense. Mm-hmm. And two, like you said, a lot of NFL coaches are not making this stark transition of, oh, you know, the Robert, sort of like when Robert Griffin wanted to be, you know, what he was, change from what he was at Baylor to a normal pocket passer. You know, offensive coordinators in the NFL aren't doing that anymore. They're letting you run what you ran at Texas Tech. They're letting you run what you ran at Cal. They're adopting those sort of similar concepts to where it's not, the transition isn't this incredibly stark contrast. You're not learning everything from the ground up as you get to the NFL. It's a lot of the stuff you've been doing your entire life.
Yeah. And I've said this a lot, and I probably said it with you too, but I mean, it's kind of amazing to me that every team in the league, except the Cowboys, has a quarterback they're either paying $16 million a year or more, you know, which is like Andy Dalton money, or they have a first round pick waiting in the wings, you know, Allen, Trubisky, these type of guys. So theoretically, coming into the season, pretty much every team was more or less somewhat happy with their situation. You know, it wasn't like, boy, we're desolate right now.
Yeah, I think that's what's made this season, just in my opinion, just difficult to predict games. I think because every single team has at least hope at quarterback. Like, there hasn't just been a team that's just desolate at the quarterback position to where, I mean, there have been, but there wasn't a team that came into the year just with no hope whatsoever at quarterback to where they're like, we're just gonna, you know, we're gonna be terrible because of it. So I do think that's why there's been so much parity and games have just been so contested.
Yeah. And one thing I think we absolutely have to mention is it's easier on these guys just from a rules standpoint too, coming in the league. Like if you're Derek or, you know, David Carr behind an awful line and you're holding the ball, you're getting your head beat in, where now it's, you know, less people hitting quarterbacks. They're protected more than ever. They can slide, you know, as opposed to like the 70s and 80s. And if you hang your receiver out to dry over the middle, he doesn't get his head taken off. And then people in the locker room at it. I mean, like, it's the rules have become a little bit easier, too, for sure.
No, I agree. I think just the pressure has not been, there's probably less pressure now than there has been in the past in terms of what's being all laid onto quarterbacks. Like you mentioned, the hits, the offenses, it's not this big, it's not scary anymore for a young quarterback. You can feel a lot more comfortable.
Yeah, right. Agreed. To me, there's three really bad quarterback situations, though, in the league that have, maybe they didn't look as bad when the season started, but none of us should be shocked. Which between Denver, Jacksonville, and the Giants, which situation's the worst for you? When you factor in age, money invested, ability to get somebody new, like if you're the GM of one of those three teams, which one would you want to be the least for the quarterback reason?
The Jacksonville Jaguars, I'd say. They just have no hope at the moment. I mean, Case Keenum, you can cut bait. I think Blake Bortles, they still have next year somewhat guaranteed to him, or just a good chunk of money guaranteed to him. And the thing is, he teases actual good games. Like, he actually plays well for stretches of time, and then it falls apart, and falls apart quickly and in egregious fashion, to where he's costing you whole games where you should have won because your defense is good enough, but he lost it for you. So from that perspective, it's terrible. And then they have really no one waiting in the wings whatsoever. They're not going to draft very highly because still the defense is so good, and they're in a cap situation where they can't really go out, and they're not going to find anyone in a free agent. They just don't have the money to go out and pay top dollar for anyone. So they are really behind the eight ball, and it came back down to their decision this offseason. When you committed to Blake Bortles after you had options in free agency, you had Teddy Bridgewater there sitting who got $10 million, you had other guys, you could have traded for Alex Smith, you could have given up something to get a guy that just provides more consistency there, and you decided not to, that to me was when they really put themselves behind the eight ball and basically put themselves in the situation they are now.
Yeah, I mean, to me, there was two major crimes with the Bortles situation. Was one, not drafting him, but giving him the contract after that. I mean, like, you committed to him after knowing, having many games to go off of. You still committed to him. Crime number one. But I've killed them the last two off seasons for doing nothing. I mean, I didn't expect them to go get Kirk Cousins, but I mean, do something. Like you said, Bridgewater. I mean, even Tyrod Taylor, who isn't good. I mean, just do something. Use a second round pick on Mason Rudolph. I mean, do anything. I mean, to sit on your hands and just sit back and be like, oh, Blake's a guy, is criminal.
I think it's, people always say, if you draft a quarterback in the top 10, he doesn't pan out, sets you back 3 years or whatever. But my thing is, if a guy hasn't panned out in year two, just the data shows it's probably not going to happen. Guys, the learning curve for quarterbacks is, yes, steep right away, but if it's not happening pretty much within the first couple of years, don't be afraid to go and do it again. Don't be afraid to go draft a quarterback in the top 10 again, because it's so valuable position. The risk of missing on a guy like that is far outweighed by the reward of hitting on a guy in the top 10. Someone like, they had their shot at Patrick Mahomes. They had their shot at Deshaun Watson. They ended up drafting a running back.
Right.
They could have had, you don't think they'd rather have either of those guys instead of Leonard Fournette right now? So from that perspective, you just have to be able to be realistic. You can't commit yourself. And something we're seeing the Bears in right now with Mitchell Trubisky, they've basically committed themselves to this quarterback who I don't think he's going to be it either. So very giving the shades of Ryan Tannehill and Blake Bortles right now with how he's playing. So you just can't have that at quarterback. You have to be able to say, he's not the guy, go out and get someone else.
Right. And if he continues on this route and the Bears do nothing, we should be very critical. If he finishes out the season looking like this, they better get Bridgewater or a second round pick at least. I mean, I'm not saying if you trade up the top five and, totally can the guy, but at least have a plan B to get you out of the season. I mean, that to me is the big problem here, too, is you just did nothing in Jacksonville. Last thing for you, and I've been asking all my guests this week, speaking of the Jags, please power rank the AFC South.
Oh, why?
Right.
No. Gosh, I'll have to go. I want to say the Titans because I think they have the most balance in the division, but Mariota is again one of these purgatory guys to where it might be time. And it's just, if it hasn't, they finally got pieces around them and it's still not happening. So I think I'm going to go Texans 1 after they beat the Jags on the road, Titans 2, Jags 3, Colts 4.
I think the Colts are clearly 4. You agree with me there? Like, that's the easiest thing to figure out.
Yes, I do. Just too many holes defensively, and Andrew Luck can only do so much. They don't have weapons.
Yeah, I think I would rank them the same way. And you think Houston takes care of Miami tomorrow?
I do. I just think they've been able to overcome that offensive line with really help Deshaun with play action, that sort of thing. But it is a huge issue. I do worry about Deshaun Watson's basically just health long term with how many times he's still getting hit. But I think D's come around enough to where Texans should be winning that division. But I wouldn't be surprised if anything happens at this point, the way sort of the parity has gone, swung back and forth in that division.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's rough. It's a tough watch right now. And although I do think Luck's turned the corner and looks really good. But, Mike, you're the man. This was fun. Let's do it again next week, bud.
Appreciate it, Matt.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Matt. Have a good one.